Now we come to the second session. The topic is science and religion. Some say science is the study of this empirical world. And others say that spirituality is the study of the transcendental world. Are they two different paradigms? Is there a common point between science and religion? So today we will talk about science and religion. And again, we'll have the same format. So on the question and answer format, please have your questions relevant to the topics that are spoken of. The first speaker, Swami Chittananji from the St. Louis Temple, will speak on the topic, Vivekananda's scientific approach to religion.
We are very pleased that we have come for this dedication ceremony of this place. Today, Sri Ramakrishna's marble statue has been installed. It is the capital of this country. No other center in this country has any marble statue, but this is unique. That means Sri Ramakrishna, he puts his heavy weight in this town. We are very pleased. Second, the topic, Vivekananda's scientific approach of religion, they selected a wrong person to talk about. I have not studied science much, but I remember when I was in first year college, I read an essay by a British writer, G.K. Chesterton, The Methods of Science. He said there are four words generally are used in science. First, observation, experimentation, verification, and conclusion. This shuns work in science. Seeing the phenomena, they observe, the scientists. Newton observed the fall of an apple, then discovered law of gravitation. That is the way science works. In Vedantic tradition, we have two types of knowledge. Devidde, Veditabbe. Lower knowledge, higher knowledge. What is lower knowledge? Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda, Shiksha. 64 branches of learning are lower knowledge. When some students would come to Sri Ramakrishna, I asked, sir, have you read Kant, Hegel, Schopenhauer, Panchadashi? Dur, abidda. Don't talk about it. What is vidya? Yatadaksharam adigamyate. Through which you can know that the ultimate reality, Akshar Brahma. That is the truth. You see, Maya has two departments. Vidya Maya, Avidya Maya. Avidya Maya is this manifested universe. And Vidya Maya takes us toward God. Avidya Maya puts us into this world. Anyhow, that is the way this science and... So all these kinds of science, physics, chemistry, mathematics, all of botany, biology, all are connected with the created things. But religion is connected, I am talking about the spirituality, paravidya, is connected with uncreated things. Created, uncreated. Swamiji gave a lecture in Gnana Yoga, Absolute and Manifestation. Manifestation, science deals with the manifested objects, and religion connected with the unknown. Ajnatam gapakam shastram, the thing which makes the unknown known, that is the realm of our scriptures. We do not know where we come from, we do not know where shall we go. These two pages of the book of life are missing. It is religion which locates, finds out those answers. Now, let us go with to Swami Vivekananda. Sri Ramakrishna opened a lab in Dakshineswar. Name of the lab is How to Realize God. He experimented, which takes away our minds from God. Kamini Kanchan, nam josh. Vedanta says these three asana, loko asana, putra asana, vitta asana. These three asana, these three desire for progeny, desire for money, and desire for name and fame, take away our minds from God. So Sri Ramakrishna experimented and verified and demonstrated to his disciples how to realize God. Swamiji came in that lab with very proud of his learning. He has noticed Sri Ramakrishna did not have any school education. Sir, you are nirakkhar. You are mukhu. Sri Ramakrishna says, well, amar akkhar gan ache. I know ABCG. I know kakha. I can sign my name. And Narendra says, I'm a nirakkhar. Very funny. So, Swamiji came with Western background. Do not accept anything without evidence. That is the main focus of Western education. They are guided by Aristotelian logic. So, there was an encounter between these two persons, Sri Ramakrishna and Swamiji. Slowly, Swamiji learned science. One of my friends says, I love Sri Ramakrishna for two things. He never speaks anything irrational. Second, he is expert in solving problems. So Swamiji came and I was arguing 6 years. He argued, he said, I fought with my guru for 6 years. As a result, I know every inch of the way. That is the Western approach Swamiji used. Anyhow, for example, Sri Ramakrishna said, check Jibu Prasad, you will get devotion. Sir, I don't believe it. Do you believe the effect of the food on the human system? Some are laxative, some are constipative. Yes, that is science. Sri Ramakrishna says, that is the way. If you take prasad, you will get science. You will get devotion. It is a science. But I don't see it. That is the realm we find in religion. You see, Swamiji, there are two types of science. Classical science, physics, chemistry, mathematics, lab, all the IIT, internet, all these things, and the spiritual science. It is a different science. Both are science. Both are seeking the truth. Science wants to know the truth. Religion also wants to know the truth. In that respect, they have no difference. But they want to know the truth in this manifested universe, and they want to know the truth in that unmanifest. Classical science. Swami Vivekananda was an intuitive scientist. He also experimented. And not only that, he told the Maharaja of Khetri that you must learn science, you must study science. He said, do you know how do I look at science? This vast universe, this vast earth. There are 5 billion people. Science and religion are two brothers. They are fighting. The science says, I only can make people happy. Religion says, no, I only can make people happy. Both are necessary. Swamiji said, science provides food, provides medicine, provides everything we need for our physical needs, for comforts. But religion takes care of our soul, our minds. Both are necessary. That Swamiji said. He says science and religion must shake hands with one another. It is extremely important how science and religion work together. Then we shall find a tremendous harmony. And you see, we need science. Swamiji said, the East neglected science, developed spirituality, religion. The West, materialistic countries, they developed science but neglected spirituality. Unbalanced. There is no society is perfect. So Swamiji wanted to balance between religion and science. That we find. What did he do, Swamiji? Do you know what did he do? He worked for 1 year in New York and wrote 4 manuals. That is correct. In America, people understand manuals. When you buy a car, I need a manual. When you buy a camera or anything, you need a manual. First you read the manual, then you open the packet. That is the way you work. So Swamiji wrote 4 manuals, 4 yogas, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga. Those 4 manuals will tell us what is our goal. The truth, the ultimate truth. You see, Swamiji said, each soul is potentially divine. The goal is to manifest this divinity by controlling nature, external or internal. Do this either by work or worship or psychic control, by one or more or all of these and be free. This is the whole of religion. So Swamiji wrote these 4 manuals to understand, to go, to reach the goal. Anyhow, it is very, very interesting that how Swamiji wrote those manuals. Science, as I told you, I do not know science, so I do not have faith like Swamiji. Do you know what Swamiji said? I have so much faith in Mother that I can speak even on unknown subjects. But we need both. That is the way we can prosper. I shall read a quote from Max Planck. Science cannot solve the ultimate mystery of nature. And that is because in the last analysis, we ourselves are part of nature, and therefore part of the mystery we are trying to solve. The most penetrating eye cannot see itself any more than a working instrument can work upon itself. Swamiji also says, if you want to know Maya, you have to transcend the Maya. Whether this religion, you see, Swamiji also mentioned in one place in Lahore lecture on Vedanta, science means that the cause of a thing is sought out by nature of the thing itself. As step by step science is progressing, it has taken the explanation of natural phenomena out of the hands of spirits and angels. Advaitism has done likewise in spiritual matters. It is the utmost science. It is utmost scientific religion. Scientific religion. As I said, Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda, they also experimented this religion and found the truth. Sri Ramakrishna never spoke anything which he did not practice thrice. Religion works. So Yogananda came, sir, I have lost. Repeat Hari's name. He did not believe it. Then he said, let me try. Then he said, yes, Master, it works. Religion works. What is the bottom line? My time is getting over. In America, you know, always there should be a bottom line. If you hear good morning America, this is the bottom line. What is my bottom line? In 1992, I went to England to conduct a retreat. Husband is an open-heart surgeon. Wife is a chemistry professor, 2 children wanted initiation. I sent them to Bhuteshanandaji, they took initiation, came back. After 3 months, the wife called me from London. Swami, there is something happened. I asked, what happened? We are not quarreling anymore. I said, mantra works. Thank you very much.
Next, I'd like to invite Swami Yogatmananji to speak on Science Meets Religion, Harmony of Vedanta and Science.
Revered and dear Swamis, as well as all the devotees assembled on this august occasion of the temple dedication, one important thing in Vivekananda's preaching of Vedanta that you find is it is very rational, presented with a tremendous scientific attitude, and yet whenever necessary, wherever it is needed, he would step beyond the boundaries of reason very easily. Reason is a great tool, but that doesn't mean reason is the only tool. So wherever one tool works, we should use it. But Vedanta does not bind itself by its tools. It is, and this is where I want to place a little emphasis today. I know the time is very limited, but I want that we should understand this while exploring this harmony between science and religion, that every tool has its applicability, its domain of application, and we must use it there. A screwdriver, for example, has its utility in certain areas. You cannot use it for beyond that. So similarly, reason is applicable in certain areas and it should be used there. But that doesn't mean that reason can be used anywhere and everywhere where it is not applicable. Like you cannot use your screwdriver for cooking food. You require the gas stoves and something like that. So if you think that, well, my screwdriver will do everything for me, then we are mistaken. We are not scientific. If we want to use reason everywhere, that means we are not scientific. So by very scientific attitude, we should also understand the applicability of tools, that our mental tools, I mean, like reason, emotion, experience, and all these to be applicable in various different domains. So science limits itself. What we call science, by this word I mean here, the physical science limits itself to, as Chaitanyananji told, created things. But then, therefore, it cannot explore the problems or our urge to realize that which is not created, that which is existence itself. When we practice religion, that is the goal that we consciously keep before us, to find out the ultimate reality, that which was never created, means it is always there, it is existence itself. Because whatever we seek in life actually lies there. For example, the happiness that we seek in life, or peace that we seek in life, the fulfillment and the perfection that we seek in life, does not fall in the created things. We try to squeeze the created things, but that what we really seek doesn't come to us. And therefore, it didn't take for Vedanta a long time to understand and realize this truth. Like Kathopanishad says very clearly, that these our sense organs are, by their very manufacturing defect, are incapable of seeing inside. It can see only outside. And therefore, those who want to realize the self, realize that which is the ultimate reality, should therefore cover their says only eyes, but by indication it means all their sense organs, because they are incapable of realizing the ultimate reality. And for about religion, many people have the idea, and it is here that Swami Vivekananda's assertion that religion has to be practiced as a matter of experience, not just matter of belief. There, Swami Vivekananda brings this scientific attitude to especially those who think religion as a matter just of believing and not experiencing. Belief is very good as a point to begin with. Even in science, you begin with belief. It should not just remain in belief. It's like a staircase. You want to go up. You begin at the first step. Doesn't mean that you stand there and that's it. So faith or belief is the beginning, and then you gradually go beyond to the level where you experience the truth. Vivekananda says that this is, if you see the origins of all religion, comes from the experience of all these great personages. Like in Raja Yoga, he says, what is Buddhism? It is the experience that Buddha experienced certain truths, and he then taught and preached those for the experience of others too. Just as if I see a very nice place and I tell others, hey, that's such a great place, would you like to go and see it? Then my words are just indication, expression, and maybe encouragement for others to go and see. And I can also tell them how they can go there. Similarly, Buddha said that here is the way to go beyond all sufferings. Would you like to go? And who would say no? Is there anybody who will say, no, I don't want to go beyond sufferings? Everybody wants to go beyond suffering. So, well, here is the way you can experience that. In the same way, you see, Swamiji said that Jesus experienced certain truths and then told that this is the way to realize that these truths that became Christianity. He said that that is very good, that is how the religions originate. But then he makes a very important statement, which is, and at least at that time it was, very much applicable to the way religion was practiced in the West, and unfortunately in India too. Just matter of belief. I believe this or I don't believe this. And he says there that most of these religions, they make a very peculiar claim that those truths were experienced by only those some people, and that age is now past. Now nobody can experience those truths. We others don't have right to experience these truths. We just have to believe. And that's it. And if we believe, when we die, on some day of judgment, which is not told which exactly that will be, that you can mark it on calendar, on some day of judgment, then you will get a passport to go to heaven. Otherwise, if you don't believe, then you will be eternally barbecued in the hell. So, that is how the religion was preached here. And Swamiji says, no, Vedanta tells us that religion is a matter of experience. Each and everyone not only can realize these truths, but must realize these truths. That is the idea of becoming religion. And here I want to make a very important distinction between the science and religion that Swamiji has made. That in science, what is called as physical science, if you give an intellectual assent to certain truths, that's enough. Not that you have to actualize or realize those truths in life. For example, you can just say that, yes, I agree that this world is made of electrons, protons, and so forth. And that's enough. Not that that person has to actually see, perceive, experience those electrons, etc. And nobody actually experiences them. But in science, that is good enough. If you give, intellectually accept it. But in religion, that is the matter of actually experiencing and living your life accordingly. If you believe, for example, if you believe that God is in everyone, and you experience then that God is in everyone, then your life should transform accordingly to express that knowledge. And that is where the very important special feature of religion is. As Vedanta says, everybody can realize this truth. We read that again, I quote from Kathopanishad, that famous verse from there, that Mrityu Prokta Nachiketo Thalabdha, that he said that, look, this Mrityu, the god of death, gave this knowledge to Nachiketa, and Nachiketa realized this. Vidyam etam yoga vidhim cha krishnam, all this wisdom and yoga, that is how to practice it, that was also learned by him. And what happened to Nachiketa with that? That brahma prapto virajo abhud vimrityu, he went beyond all impurity and gone beyond death and realized the ultimate truth in life. And the last line of this verse expresses the tremendous scientific spirit of Vedanta. Anyopevam yah vidadhatyameva. That anybody else who realizes this, this is not a monopoly of somebody, that only these people will get it. Anyopevam yah vidadhatyameva. That anybody else who knows this will also get there. Like driving directions, you know, that you can drive at that place if you have the driving directions. If I know, I can also drive to that place according, if I drive according to the directions, I will get there. Anybody who follows will get there. It doesn't depend on a particular person. So this is an important idea there, that it is a scientific religion that is that is told by Vivekananda. Vedanta is to be practiced as a science, not just as a matter of belief. He mentions in another place that he will try to show that how these truths of Vedanta are very scientific. And he makes a very important comment there, that and wherever we find that religion, these truths of Vedanta do not agree with science, the deficiency is in science, not in Vedanta. What needs to be corrected is not Vedanta, but the science needs to correct itself. And that is a very important thing, friends. So thank you. He already told me the time is over.
And our final speaker, I'd like to invite Pravachika Brahmaprana, who will speak on Raja Yoga, The Mind is the Laboratory.
I feel that Swami Vivekananda's Raja Yoga is one of Vedanta's greatest gifts to the Western world, to the world. The front matter of this scripture contains tantric metaphysical system of the Kundalini, which is not normally contained in yoga, the yoga system, but it gives us a practical knowledge and an integrated understanding of the one current that is within us. So this demystifies this religion, sweeps away any puritanical notions of sin, and shows us a direct relevance of the ethical life in order to lift that one current. Swami Vivekananda's meditations are also extremely helpful to beginners who have not yet found a guru. These are beautiful meditations. Swamiji's classes took place in the West. His manuscript was published in the West, and this is no mistake. The yoga psychology appeals to the Western mind, the reason, the self-reliance, and the scientific mind here in the West. It is experimental and experiential, and it puts spiritual life in our own hands. So this is a clear, systematic approach to enter the laboratory of the mind, to investigate, master, and transcend the mind. The yoga system of psychology establishes a profound difference between East and West in terms of the psychology and Western material science. The Yoga Vedanta premise is that we have a mind, but we are not the mind. We are the self, the Purusha, the Atman. We're not the false ego, the I and mine, and the source of this I, the I am, is in the heart, not the brain. So contrary to Western science and psychology, most Western psychology, consciousness is not an epiphenomenon of the brain. The mind is an instrument, a reflection of the Atman within. So this paradigm, when we first come across it, is so empowering. It allows us to watch and detach from this mind and thereby gain control of it. And this is so necessary in this age where we experience so much stress, anxiety, and depression, this being our number one health issue. So instead of prescription drugs, we can take a psychology drug, and there's no fear of an overdose. The Yoga Sutras teach us this. We can be our own psychologist. We can see the mind for what it is, a monkey, drunk, stung by a bee. Yes, this is the climate of an ordinary mind, scattered, forgetful, dull, sometimes scattered and sometimes concentrated, but rarely one-pointed. This is an ordinary mind, which is an unhealthy mind. So yoga tells us, teaches us, that we can look into this mind. We can see thoughts as they rise and fall and know them to be impermanent, unstable, non-eternal, in fact, subtle matter. We are not the mind. And this is a radical truth. And it gives us such tremendous incentive. The fact that we can watch the mind with a higher mind, the mindful mind, the witness mind, and that the lower mind can be objectified, gives us the knowledge and the power to detach from the mind. So we can begin to disassociate ourselves from thoughts that we mistake for our true nature. And by following the yoga methodology, we can uncover our true self. We can analyze the mind, its strengths and its weaknesses, and we can learn to calm and control it, purify and stabilize it. To me, there are four, at least four, gifts that we can find in Raja Yoga. The first is a beautiful analogy of the lake of the mind. Swamiji gives us this, that the Purusha, the Atman, is on the lake bottom, and the lake itself is the chitta, the mind stuff. As one senior Swami in our order, as he defines it, it's our personality, our being. And like a cauldron of water, this chitta, this mind stuff, is colorless, odorless, without shape. In fact, it takes the shape of the vessel that contains it. So any sense perception, any thought, any emotion leaves a vritta, a vritti, which is a whirlpool, a thought wave, I guess you could say, 1,001 movements that are going on in this chitta all the time, at least, stirring the surface waters, stirring the waters underneath, muddying it, sending out ripples that are electrically charged, that refract and reflect the non-Atman, and thus conceal the lake bottom, the Atman. The second gift is understanding the nature of samskara, tendency, that any thought or action creates the opportunity for us to repeat it. The samskara is a tendency of the mind. We start with one thought. Someone insults us. We become angry, and a pebble is dropped into the lake of the mind. And each time we remember that insult, another pebble is deposited. And if I think of that insult 100 times in one day, it's 100 pebbles that go to the lake bottom. And over 30 years' time, we're talking a major resentment, you can imagine what a huge embankment I have built up. to the point where I become what is called an angry person. And it takes very little for someone to trigger that anger within me. So this one thought created a tendency that impelled me to repeat it, to repeat it. It's not the thoughts that matter, but what happens after the thoughts. And so also with any affliction, fear or craving. So it is not the thought that is harmful, but our reaction to it. Third, how Patanjali, Maharishi Patanjali, explains perception, gives us this understanding. It just really brings it home how important it is for us to watch the mind. He shows us step by step how we become victims of our senses. For example, when we perceive a sense object, the chitta, the mind stuff, pours out through the two orifices. Let's say it's chocolate cake. It reaches and encompasses it and responds back as light and vision. And the sense organ, the manas, carries to the optic nerve in the brain center, and the visual form reposes in the brain. This mind stuff has taken the form of the object of vision. Chitta, like water, becomes what we perceive through the five sense organs. We be and become that perception. What we think, that we become. So our thought holds that object in the mind, and the more we think of that object, the more we saturate ourselves with that idea. And just as water melts whatever is solvent, it retains sugar, though the sugar melts, so also the mind has the capacity that when we think of an attachment, that sense object saturates the chitta. I be and become that chocolate cake. The last, the fourth, the science of mind gives us the methodology of psychic control. If I at this present moment, am a product of my past, what stops me from building my future by managing the present? If some scars are the source of my bondage, why not take advantage of this? Why not use this methodology and create new samskaras, spiritually powerful enough to renew my mind? Why not try to find an object, the same as my true original nature, concentrate on that object, and slowly be and become that? Why not that make that my habit, with concentration and willpower? So if I only allow those vrittis to form that are logical, rational, spiritual, and systematically plant them in my mind, I become involved with those ideas to such an extent that those vrittis become diminished to one, the mantra. I will lose sense of time and space. Why? Because the time concept exists with change. And when my mind becomes one vritti, there's limited change. So I lose a sense of time and space. And so also I lose a sense of I and mine. Only our heart's beloved remains. We be and become our chosen ideal. So in Raja Yoga, we learn how to enter the laboratory of the mind, to watch and understand the nature of the mind. And with this practice comes knowledge, comes power. And by gathering the powers of the mind with skillful means of a higher mind, we use the mind to control, master, and transcend the mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Pravachika Brahma Prana. At this point, we do open up our panel to questions from the audience. So if you'd like to ask a question, please come to the speaker here. I request that you ask questions regarding the subject of the matter. Okay, while we're waiting for somebody to come, maybe I can pose a question to the speakers. This is also for anybody who'd like to ask. In science, we see experiments can be set up and carried out to test and prove a principle. And once a principle has been proven, it can be duplicated by others in repeated experiments. In the case of spiritual practices, is there a similar way to establish proof that is universally effective? In other words, if it works for you, why doesn't it work for me? That's the question.
Very good question. Really, it is a very, very beautiful question. Insulin, diabetes. Insulin works on all people in this world, on the diabetic patient. You may be an African, American, German, French, Indian, does not matter. It must work. Scientifically proved. It has been experimented and verified millions and millions of people and time. It works. His question is that whether in spiritual life also the same, it works in the same way or not. It does. Patanjali, the father of yoga psychology, experimented. Each aphorism has been experimented and verified. It works. Sri Ramakrishna experimented. He said it will work. Those who are quack doctors, hey, take this medicine. Oh, doctor, it is not working. Oh, that wasn't working, take this one. Oh, it is not working. Hey, take this one. The doctors are changing medicine because they are quacks. But the real doctors, when he gives a medicine which works, he has so much conviction that it worked on me. It is as in the human body, as you see that insulin works, similarly in the human mind, it works. That I was trying to say, I could not explain, I cannot elaborate it. Science and religion, science takes care of the body, food, medicine, all of our physical comforts, that is science's department. And religion takes care of our soul, mind, peace. Peace and bliss you cannot buy in the market. Science cannot, materialistic science cannot make a person happy. Swamiji says materialism makes a person selfish. While there is selfish, there is no peace. I sometimes go, you go to a grocery market and say, I want 5 pounds bliss, 10 pounds peace, will you get? It cannot be sold. That comes from religion. You see, this meditation, this works. Really, people experimented it, verified it. As Swami was yesterday was telling, giving us statistics, how many millions of people are practicing meditation in this country. It really works. Why?
No, that is. That was question to you.
That was question to me?
Well, it could be to anybody else.
All right, then I shall tell one story. A man bought a transcendental meditation mantra and practiced it. His wife says, Harry, talk to me. Well, I have no time. I bought a mantra. I must repeat the mantra. Harry, talk to me. He kept quiet. The wife tried to talk to, communicate with her husband, could not make it. Then she was very upset. Harry, talk to me, otherwise I shall leave you. Then he said, please don't disturb me, I'm repeating mantra. Then she packed her suitcase and everything, called a cab. Cab was waiting outside. Harry, still time, please talk to me. He did not open the eyes. When the wife took the baggage, put into the cab, and left, then opened the eyes, mantra works.
Thank you. Thank you, Maharaj. It doesn't seem like the audience wants to ask any questions, so I'll ask another question here. This is to Brahma Prana.
Now it is your turn.
No! Yeah,
this question is for Brahma Prana. In Raja Yoga, one of the goals is to have one-pointedness, concentration. When I came out of the airport yesterday, I noticed that as soon as we got out of the airport, people got their iPhones or their iPads, or as Swami Shantarupananda calls it, thou pads.
Thou pads.
And they started looking for their emails or for news or for information. It seems like the current technology seems to take us out more and more. It seems that our minds are tending to go more outward instead of inward. And this is the current trend, and we're only going to go further. It seems like our minds are only going to get more diversified. And we have competing things that want to grab our mind, and we're allowing our mind to be grabbed. So it seems to me that this is the opposite of what spirituality is about. Now the question to you is, because it also appears to me that we cannot live without technology. I tried it for 2 days without internet. And people expect you to answer emails. This is a form of communication. It's something that you can't live without. Now, this is a very tricky situation. Is there a way I can use the tools that technology has given us to get me one-pointed, to take me back into one-pointedness, back to myself?
That's a really good question. Yeah. It's such a such an essential problem we have right now. Fear. Nissan did a study when I was in Santa Barbara. A dear friend of mine, Alan Wallace, who was a former Buddhist monk for 12 years or so, and a translator for the Dalai Lama, he gave a course on consciousness in the world's religions, and we collaborated a little bit. And he showed a study, and we were guinea pigs. We were part of this study. We were to see a 5-minute film of a basketball team, and we were asked to count the number of times the ball bounced. So there were maybe 300 people in the room. And so for 5 minutes, our attention was really focused on that ball. And at the end, we were asked, and some said 8, some said 7, and one person got it right, 9. And then Alan asked, "Did you know anything strange about that movie?" And we said, "No." He said, "Let me play the film again for you." We watched the film, and right in the middle of it, a man in a gorilla suit walked through the basketball court, and none of us had seen that. And that was Nissan's study that in fact, the conclusion was that cell phones are dangerous. We cannot multitask. When we pick up the iPhone and we start looking at that, we've got to know that we're not going to be aware of what's going on around us. We really can't do that. So the knowledge of what happens when we are focused too much, we have to understand it can be dangerous. And the other thing is that neuroscientists are now finding that it's having an impact on the brain that we're not prepared for. For example, in Vedanta, Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, such an important part of our spiritual life to think and contemplate on a subject. And then we realize that if we are spending our time amusing, playing video games, or even doing serious stuff like emails when you've got about 13 different windows opening and closing on your... That's having an effect so that we're not processing. We're taking things in. And so this downtime, we're losing. And scientists have discovered that the brain is working 30 times harder. It's working 30 times more during our downtime than when we are interacting. So that's the time that the brain is processing and allowing us to prepare for future contingencies, and that's not happening now. And so much of our life is taken up with just instant technology.
I've heard, you know, like in multitasking, which is very common now, that they said if you're doing two tasks, 40% of your mind is going on one task, another 40% is going on another task, and 20% is being lost going between the tasks. So it's actually much more inefficient to multitask as opposed to doing one task, completing it, and then doing another task. Swami Yogatmananji, would you have any, with this technology, how is it that we can use this technology to our advantage?
Well,
in a spiritual way.
Yes. I beg to differ a little bit in this matter. I suggest here that it is not the advancement of tools that is creating distraction. It is the tools are there, we can use them for our betterment. If we don't use those tools, still nothing, not that our minds were before iPhone, they were very concentrated and thinking of God. Only the distraction was different, that's all. It is not that the iPhone has taken away a lot of our concentration, otherwise we were all meditating on God as soon as we came out of the plane. And now we took out the iPhone and started looking at it. It is we did not put blame on those things. Otherwise we will miss the point. The blame is to be put in for introspection. We have to see that what is really causing distraction. Otherwise, this has been the tendency about iPhone and such things now. Earlier it used to be about just the ordinary mobile phones also. It used to be also about TVs. Everything, when the printed books started coming, if you read those, that now the books are getting printed. And therefore, the knowledge is getting cheap. The reverence for that knowledge is no longer there because everything is getting printed.
E-books.
Now we have e-books also. Does it mean that it has become more available? I don't think that it is a distraction. About multitasking, what you are saying, it makes sense. But again, there also, every task can be divided into many tasks. And many tasks also can be combined to look as one task. For example, I am sitting and I am talking. Can you look upon them as two tasks or one task? If I divide it as, well, I have to do two tasks, sitting and then talking. Then in between I am losing. So it depends on how you package the task. Otherwise, you are right that if you are doing multitasking, your time gets lost, your attention gets lost, your mind gets divided. But then you can divide any single task into many tasks. When I ask somebody that, you were going to perform that work, did you finish? And then that person tells me, one thing could have been easily said, that I had to cook and therefore I didn't have time. But then that person would tell in it five tasks, that, I had to take out the veggies from the refrigerator, I had to chop them, and then I had to look for the pots. And so instead of one work, it became five works now. So I had been multitasking with five works. So it is the question of perception. So on both these things, my understanding is that we are unnecessarily blaming the gadgets or the new things that are coming up. Those things were not imposed on us. Our restless mind invented those things. And now we started blaming them. It is. It is the dog complaining about the tail that it is wagging me. So, thank you.
Thank you. Raj, anything, sir? One last question then.
It's actually not a question, it's only a quick observation. I was inspired to say that after Chetananji made a very humorous comment on the bottom line, mantra works. So when Swami Yogatmananji taught, I realized for myself there was another bottom line there. He said after Nachiketa's story that the driving directions work for everybody. So I soon realized, I think, including myself, many of us have been studying this driving direction so much that we are not starting to drive at all.
Thank you.